Get started here. so we are on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We are up to the first line of the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, "Umayishna ktana de achla b'sruma, umayishna chareshes de la achla b'sruma." Why is it that if a ktana marries a kohen, she's allowed to eat truma, but if a chareshes, a deaf mute woman, marries a kohen, she's not? How do we know that that distinction is even true? Disnan, heyed Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida al hachareshes shehisia avia sheyotza beget v'yaktana bas Yisrael sheniseis lechoin sheocheles besruma v'ilu chareshes lo achla. It's based on an inference from a Mishnah that appears in Maseches Edios, quoted in Gittin as well, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgida testified that if a father marries off his daughter who's a ktana, who's also a chareshes, who's also a deaf mute, so the din is that if the husband wants to divorce her, he must give her a get. And in contrast, if you have a ktana who's a Bas Yisrael, who marries a Kohen, she's allowed to eat Truma. But what the Mishnah does not say is that a Chareshes is allowed to eat Truma. So why is that distinction true? So the Gemara explains, Gzeira Shema Yachil Cheresh Bachareshes. We're afraid that if we allow her to eat Truma in this scenario, she may come to feed Truma to, let's say, to a case of a Cheresh and a Chareshes. If a Chareshes married a Cheresh who was a Kohen, the marriage is not binding me to Oraisa, so we're afraid that she's going to eat Truma in that context. So the Gemara says, okay, but what's the big deal? Valecho, Katan Ochal Nevelosu. What, in other words, even if she goes ahead and consumes truma, at the very worst, it's considered what's called katan ochel nevelos. We're going to get a lot more into this, really more on tomorrow's daf. But the idea is that if someone does an iser, let's say, for example, if a katan does an avera, as we'll talk a lot more about tomorrow, you know, generally speaking, you're not obligated to stop them from doing the avera. You can't actively cause them to do the avera, but you don't have to stop them. So if the chareshes is doing the avera, so you don't have to go out of your way to stop her. So the Gemara says, no, gzera shema yachil cheresh b'fikachas. And the reason why this gzera was imposed is because what if you have a scenario where a regular woman, a competent woman, married a kohen who's a cheresh? So again, that marriage is not binding me to Oraisa, and we're afraid that the pikachas, that the competent woman, is going to end up eating truma. So the Gemara says, okay, what's the big deal? V'cheresh b'fikachas nami lecho b'sruma d'rabanan. There could at least be a scenario where the pikachas, by dint of her husband, the cheresh kohen, should be allowed to at least eat truma mid'rabanan. We know, again, we've spoken about in the past, that mid'Oraisa, truma is only required to be separated from dagan, tirush, v'yitzer, grain, wine, and oil. Things like fruits and vegetables are only obligated in truma mid'rabanan. So at the very least, if this marriage is only binding mid'rabanan, at least we should allow her to eat truma midrabanan. So the Gemara says, you're right, gzera dilma asi lo uchla b'sruma d'oraisa. It's a gzera, lest she come to eat truma d'oraisa. Okay, then the Gemara asks, umayishna ktana de isla ksuba, umayishna chareshes de leisla ksuba. Why is it that only a ktana is entitled to a ksuba in the event that the husband divorces her or that he dies, but a chareshes is not? So the Gemara says, diyem kein mimne eva lanasvela. Because otherwise, if you were to insist that a chareshes was also entitled to a ksuba, no one would want to marry her. It's gonna disincentivize people from marrying her if they know that they have to pay out a ksuba. So what would theoretically incentivize people to marry a chareshes is if they knew that they got some kind of a financial break by not having to pay out the ksuba, they might be more incentivized to marry her. So then the Gemara asks, uktana menolan de isla ksuba. How do we know that a ktana is entitled to a ksuba? Disnan, hamima enes v'hashniya v'ailenis ein lahen ksuba v'yotze beget, uktana yesh la ksuba. Comes the Mishnah in Maseches Ksubis, Maseches Bava Metzia, and says that in a scenario of Mion, or in a case where you married a woman who was forbidden to you as a Shnios Le'arayos, meaning to say it was only a secondary type of a relationship that was also Midurabana, but Midoraisa, the marriage would have been binding, or a woman who's an islandess, who's barren, who physically cannot bear children, so they are not entitled to a Ksuba, but if you want to divorce them, you have to give them a get. In contrast, the Mishnah says that a Ktana is entitled to a Ksuba. The Chareshes Menol and Delays L'Ksuba. How do we know that a Chareshes is not entitled to Ksuba? Disanya, cheresh reshota shenasu pikchos. Let's say you have a man who's either a cheresh or a shota who marries a regular woman. Afal pishenis pakeach a cheresh v'nishtafa hashota ein lohem aleim klum ratzu lekaiman yesh lohem ksuba. So the Mishnah makes the following distinction, that even if later on after the marriage the cheresh becomes a regular person, he gets back his ability to hear and to speak, or the shota regains his mental faculties, it doesn't make a difference. They're still not obligated to pay out the ksuba unless they decide to continue the marriage. Meaning, if let's say they become competent and then they say, you know what, I'm done with this marriage, I want to go find somebody else, they're not obligated to pay out the ksuba. But if they say, you know what, I'm perfectly happy staying with this woman, so now it's almost like the marriage kind of restarts, and now if eventually they die or get, if he dies or they get divorced later on, he is going to have to shell out the ksuba. Then the Gemara says,
Rabbi, so what is this, a marriage then? When you marry, somebody marries a cheresh, a competent person,
That marriage is only binding midrabanan. But if, again, like the Gemara just said, if it turns out that at some point they become competent, so then everything kind of restarts. They have the option to either dissolve the marriage or to continue it. Yeah. Okay.
And that's either way, whether it's a man, whether it's a woman.
Correct. We'll see as we go on. Again, we already referenced this briefly yesterday, that from the woman's perspective, things might be a little bit different, because technically you can divorce a woman, you know, even against her will, midoraisa, so that may be a little bit different in terms of how to dissolve marriages. But in terms of how the marriage begins, if either partner is going to be not basically a regular competent person, so again, with the one exception of if the father marries off his daughter who's a katana, there we said the marriage is binding midoraisa, but otherwise the marriages are really only going to be midorabanan.
But this rabbinic marriage goes through, I understand maybe there's no ketubah, but goes through the whole thing, everything.
Yeah, it looks like a regular, marriage, it's just the marriage is midorabanan. Yeah, Walter, your question?
So in the case of, if the father died and the brother, or...
yeah, that marriage is midorabanan. That's only midorabanan, that marriage.
So therefore there's no ketubah.
I mean, the Gemara a second ago just quoted the Mishnah, that said that a mima enes, right, that's the girl who's married off by her mother or brother, where she walks out on the marriage, she's not entitled to a ksuba. Now you have to give her a get, but she's not entitled to a ksuba, correct. Okay, so the Gemara that says, Ufikech shenasa chareshes o shota, afilu kasav la meyamana ksuvasa kayamas bibne sheratza lizok benachasav, taima deratza halo ratza inla, te imkein mimne evil anasila. So comes the Gemara and says the following: if a regular competent man marries a chareshes or a shota, a woman who's deaf, mute, or has some kind of a mental disability, even if he writes in his ksuba, I'm gonna give over 100 manas, some exorbitant sum of money, so the Gemara says that statement is binding. Why? Because he wanted to, quote unquote, damage his own possessions. In other words, the man has every right to obligate himself to pay whatever he wants. The same way that we have a principle by a normal marriage called Tosefes Ksuba, right? You can obligate yourself to pay more than the base amount of a Ksuba. That for sure works. So the husband has every right to say, I want to pay as much as I want to my wife, even though she's a Chareshes Shota, whatever. That's fine. The obvious implication is that if he does not obligate himself financially, so then he is not obligated to pay her anything, for the obvious reason that because otherwise it's going to disincentivize men from wanting to marry women who are either a chareshes or a shota. So we want to give them every opportunity, these women, to get married. So therefore, we're not going to obligate them to pay anything for a ksuba, unless, of course, they decide that they want to on their own. So then the Gemara pushes back. So then you should ask the opposite question. What if you have a case where the woman is a regular competent woman and the man is a chereish? Then we should dafka insist on a ksuba, because otherwise, what woman is going to want to marry a chereish if they're not going to get a ksuba out of it? So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Yoser Misha Ish Rotza Lisa, Isha Rotza Lihinase. It's a famous idea that comes up in a few other places in Shas as well, which is that women want to get married more than men do. And sometimes the Gemara has this idea in Maseches Kiddushin of Tav Lemesav Tandu Milamesav Armalu, that sometimes women will quote unquote settle for less. They'll marry someone who's maybe not up to snuff because they just want to get married. So the Gemara says we don't need to incentivize them with the ksuba because they just want to get married. Whereas men maybe are not right up to that standard, so therefore we have to kind of give them more incentives to get married. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Ahu Cheresh to have a Beshiva. There was a cheresh, a man who was a cheresh, who lived in the community of Rav Malkio. So he got married, and as part of his ksuba, he decided to write over 400 zuz, again, an exorbitant amount of money from his possessions to his wife. So Amar Rava, man chakim kirav Malkio degaver rabahu. Says, look how big of a talmud chacham, look how great Rav Malkio is, that he was able to come up with some kind of a compromise where he was able to get the cheresh married, but also give his wife some kind of, some money as per the ksuba. Kasavar ilu rata shivcha l'shamisho mila zavnionle kol shekin hacha diikatarite. Rav Malkio reasoned. He said, if I wanted to purchase a maid servant, of course you have to pay her for her services to work for you. So here, when you get married, you're getting two things: you're getting a wife, and you're getting someone to help around the house. So because you're getting two things, so therefore he said, certainly you should have to shell out some money for this marriage. Okay. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Shmuel, Eishas Chereish Ein Chayoven Aleha Hashem Tali. Comes to the Gemara and says, if a man goes ahead and accidentally has relations with the wife of a cheresh. Now, again, what does it mean accidentally? Let's say he didn't know that she was married, right? So the din is that you're not chayv in Asham Tali. What's an Asham Tali? An Asham Tali normally means that you have to bring a karban when you're unsure if you did an avir. Let's say, for example, this is a famous case that the Gemara quotes. Let's say you're in your house at night, and your wife is there, and then there's another woman, and you didn't realize that there was another woman there until the following morning, and then you realize the next morning that you had relations, but you don't know which woman you had relations with. So there you have no idea, you know what happened. So the din is you have to bring an Asham Tali. And basically, the purpose of an Asham Tali is that it suspends any possible Avera until such time that you figure out whether you did the Avera. If you find out that you really did the Avera, then you have to bring a regular carbon chata. So Yashim Talui just kind of hangs things in suspense until you can clarify what actually happened. So again, the Gemara says that if one accidentally had relations with the wife of a Chiresh, there's not even an Yashim Talui, because again, that marriage is not binding me to Oraisa. So the Gemara says, Lema Misayale, Chamisha Lo Yisro Muvi, Tarmuin, Shrumas, and Shruma Ve Iluhain, Chiresh Shote, the Katan, the Hatorim, as Sheeno Shalova, Ovid Kochavim, Shetaram Shal Yisrael, Afilu Berishos Yisrael, Ain Shrumas or Truma. There's a Mishnah Mesechus Shrumos that says that there are five types of people where even if they separate Truma Bidiyeved, their Hafrasha, their act of separation, is not valid even Bidiyeved. So who are the five people? The Cheresh, Shota, and a Katan. Then you have one who separates Truma from possessions that are not his, from produce that does not belong to him. Or if a non-Jew separates Truma from a Jew's produce, even if the Jew authorized him to do so. But what do you see from this Mishnah in Shrumos? That a Cheresh does not have the ability to separate Truma, which is basically another way of saying that we don't give any credibility. We don't treat the person as if they have Das. So therefore, the assumption seems to be that anything that they do is not binding me to Oraisa. This would seem to lend support to what the Gemara just said a second ago, that if one has relations with the wife of a Chiresh, Bishogeg, they're not obligated to bring an Ashim Talui. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Hu da Amar ki Rabbi Elazar, the Sanya Rabbi Yitzchak Omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Trumas Chiresh lo Tetzeh lechulin mipnei shehu safek. This could reflect the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, that when it comes to Truma, we basically treat it like a safek. In other words, we're not really sure what the status of a Chiresh is, so if a Chiresh were to separate Truma, you can't just say, oh, that produce is chulin, it's not true at all, it's nothing, but we're not sure what to do with it. So then the obvious question is, if it's a suffig, isvira kerabi alazar, ashom tolu nami lichayav. If this is really a suffig, that we're unsure of the status of a chiresh, well then at the very least, you should be obligated to bring an ashom tolu. If one accidentally had relations with the wife of a chiresh, and we're subscribing to Rabbi Elazar's position that we're not really sure what the status of a chiresh is, so then presumably you should bring an ashom tolu in such a scenario. Why does the Gemara say that you're not obligated? So the Gemara says, no, be'inan chaticha mishtei chatichos, because there's a different standard when it comes to an Ashram Talui. This opinion in the Gemara holds that in order to be chayiv an Ashram Talui, you need to have a scenario, what's called chaticha mishtei chatichos, which basically means you have to have a case where there are two possibilities in front of you, right? The famous example of this is, let's say I have two pieces of meat in front of me, and I know that one is kosher and I know that one is not, but I don't know what's what. And I ate one of the pieces of meat, so everyone agrees in that case you have to bring an Ashram Talui, because that's what's called chaticha mishtei chatichos, one out of two. However, what if you have only chaticha achas? I have one piece of meat in front of me and I have no idea if the meat is kosher or treif, and I eat it. So according to one day in the Gemara, Maseches Krisos, you're not chayav an Ashram Talui. That's called chaticha akas. Again, this is a whole discussion in Krisos, what the difference is really a statistical difference or is it a halachic difference? But the bottom line is that this opinion in the Gemara holds that you only bring an Ashram Talui in a scenario where you basically have two options in front of you and you're not sure what's what. Here, in the case of the wife of the Chiresh, there's just one woman in front of you. You just don't know what her status is, because we generally don't know what the status of a Chiresh is. So in other words, you can argue on the one hand that we're unsure of the status of a Chiresh, and therefore we have to treat their truma misafik as if it's real truma, and we can't just assume that it's chulin. But on the other hand, we can exempt you from an Ashram Talui almost on a technicality, because it doesn't meet the standard, the bar, for bringing an Ashram Talui. So the Gemara,
according to those who say it's not Yotze when it's truma, how does he eat his produce?
So maybe he could separate me to Rabbanan, maybe he could have someone else separate it for him. Again, there are other ways to get around this theoretically, but in terms of the status of the Chiresh, is the Gemara is basically saying the Chiresh status is up in the air. It's just that for Ashram Talui, we need something a little bit more definitive in order to obligate you in a carbon. That's essentially what the Gemara is saying. Okay, so then the Gemara asks, Umi boy Rabbi Elazar chaticha mishtei chatichos v'hasanya, Rabbi Elazar omer, koi chayavin al chelbo Ashram Talui. The Gemara says, hang on one second, is it really true that Rabbi Elazar believes that you only bring an Ashram Talui in this type of case where you have, chaticha mishtei chatichos, where you have two options in front of you? It's not true. The Gemara references a brisa, which says if you have an animal which is called a koi is an animal that's a suffik chaya, a suffik behema. You're not sure whether it's a domesticated or a wild animal. We know that you're only chaya for eating the chaylev of a behema. Chaylev of a chaya is mutter lechanchila to eat. So what if I have an animal that's a suffik and I go ahead and I eat the chaylev? So the brisa says you have to bring an Ashram Talui. That's only one suffik, right? In other words, I don't know the status of the chaylev of a koi. So it's just one suffik. Is it chaylev behema or chaylev chaya? And yet Rabbi Elazar still says I have to bring an Ashram Talui. So doesn't that, so So doesn't that contradict what the Gemara just said a second ago? So the Gemara says no. Shmuel suffer k'rabbi Elazar b'chada ufalag alei b'chada. So one version of the Gemara is that Shmuel only subscribed to one of Rabbi Elazar's statements. In other words, he bought into the idea that the status of a cheresh is up in the air, that we're not sure how to treat a cheresh. But on the other hand, he did not buy into this notion regarding the Asham Talui. Shmuel thought that you bring an Asham Talui even in a case of chaticha achas, even when there's only one suffix in front of you, whereas Rabbi Elazar disagreed with that notion. Then the Gemara says, V'ika da'amre, amar al-chi abarashi, amar Shmuel. Then the Gemara in the second version quotes that if one engages in relations b'shogeg with the wife of a cheresh, they are in fact obligated to bring an asham toli against what we saw in the first version of the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, Meisvei chamisha lo yisromu. What about the fact that the Mishnah in Trumos told us that a cheresh is one of the five types of people that cannot separate truma even b'di'eved, which would lead us to believe that a cheresh, in other words, that we treat a cheresh as if they're nothing. In other words, we don't give them the status as if they have any das. So the Gemara says, no, sever look at Rabbi Elazar. Like we said before, this opinion in the Mishnah holds like Rabbi Elazar, that we're basically unsure of the status of a cheresh. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Ba'ar Ravashi, my time of the Rabbi Elazar, mivshab shitale the cheresh daita klishtehu umihu misapkale idaita tzilusa ilav daita tzilusa uliola amchada daitahu odilma pshitale the daita klishta vilav daita tzilusahu v'hakahinu time of kiven deitim chalim beitim shota." So the Gemara has the following question regarding the nature of a cheresh in general. The Gemara wants to know like this: do we assume that a cheresh basically is consistent in terms of their level of das? It's just that their das to begin with is very weak. A cheresh has less mental faculties than a regular person, but whatever level of mental capability they have is consistent throughout their life. They have that same level of mental clarity, whatever degree that they have throughout their life. Or maybe we say no. Maybe we say that a cheresh doesn't have mental clarity, and they're also, in other words, and they also don't have das at all. It's just that sometimes they become completely competent where they're 100% with it, and sometimes they're 100% not with it. So the Gemara says, L'may naf gamin, what's the difference between these two very theoretical approaches? So the Gemara says, Lahotzi ishto beget. Iyamar chada daitahu kikidushin kach gerishin. The Iyamar itim chalim itim shota kidushin matzim akadish gerushin lo matzim agarish mai teku. The Gemara says the nafkamina would be regarding whether a cheresh can divorce his wife. Because if you're going to hold it the first approach in the Gemara, that basically a cheresh has das, the same level of das his whole life, it's just a lower level of das than a regular person, so then you can argue that of course he can divorce his wife. The same way he got married with this lesser level of das, he can get divorced with the same exact lesser level of das. But if you believe that a cheresh is either 100% there or he's 100% not there, so then the Gemara says then there's no way to justify how he could get divorced, because you don't know if he has the same level of competency now that he did when he initially got married. So the Gemara leaves that as an unresolved suffix. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Nishtatis. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Dvar Torah, Shota Misgareshes, Midi Dahava Apikachas Baal Karcha. So Mida Oraisa, one can divorce his wife who is a Shota, the same way that you can divorce your regular competent wife against her will, Mida Oraisa. So you can do the same if she's a Shota. Uma Tam Amru Eina Megureshes. Why then, Mida Rabbanan, did Chazal impose a Gzera that you should not divorce your wife who's a Shota? Shalo Yinaguba Menekhethkur, because otherwise people will take advantage of her. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara asks, Hechidami, Ilema, it can't be that we're talking about a scenario where the woman understands that she's getting divorced and she knows how to take care of herself, and who's going to take advantage of her? She knows how to take care of herself. So it must be we're talking about a case where she, in other words, doesn't really understand that she's getting divorced, and she also has no way of taking care of herself. So in that type of case, the Gemara says, midrabanan, you're not allowed to divorce her. So the Gemara then asks, Dvar Torah Shota Misgareshes, V'ha'amar Devei Rabbi Yanai, V'nasan Biyada Mishiesh So comes the Gemara and asks, why are we assuming that the prohibition against or the inability to divorce your wife who's a shota is only a din derabana? And it's not true. You can't even do that midoraisa. How do we know that? Because on the one hand, the Gemara says, first of all, that your wife needs to have a yad, a hand, in order to receive the get, and this woman does not have the capability of doing that. And on top of that, the pasuk says in Parshas you have to send your wife away from your house. The implication is that when you get divorced, the assumption is that your wife knows that she can't come back to your house. A shota presumably doesn't know that. She's going to keep coming back, not realizing that she was divorced. So the Gemara says, forget about this takana derabana that we don't want people to treat her at, you know, as if she was hefker. This is a problem mida oraisa. Why is the Gemara presenting the issue of divorcing your wife as a shota as just a problem mida rabanan? It's a problem mida oraisa. So the Gemara says, you're right. Lo tzricha diodas lishmor gita ve'ena yodas lishmor atzma dvar Torah. So the Gemara says, you're right, that basically the Takana de Rabbanan was only necessary for this middle ground case where the woman understands how to protect her get. She understands that she, conceptually she got divorced. divorced. The problem is that she just doesn't know how to take care of herself. She's not physically capable of taking care of herself. So Mida Oraisa, you can divorce her in that scenario because she does understand the concept of divorce. The problem is that Mida Rabbanu Chazal said don't do it because she basically has no way of taking care of herself. Okay, then the Gemara says,
yeah. What do we do today? Let's say a woman goes into a coma. I mean, can you where you can't have two wives.
Right, correct. So, So today things get more complicated because, first of all, you can't have multiple wives, and second of all, you also can't divorce your wife against her will today after the Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom. So a lot of these discussions become very theoretical because many of these presumptions that we're making are no longer going to apply. So, you know, unless you invoked, you know, the famous, what's called the Heter Meir Rabbanan. There's a famous idea that if you get 100 prominent rabbis together and you basically, you know, retroactively annul the marriage, but that hasn't happened since about the 1500s. So it's pretty much impossible for any of these things to really play out as manazeh because, again, of all the takanos and the cherems of Rabbeinu Gershom that we've adopted. The Gemara in fact says that this is meduyek. This distinction is actually found in the Mishnah. Because when it comes to a scenario where the woman becomes a shota, the Mishnah just says, don't divorce her. But when it comes to a case where the man becomes a shota, it says, lo yotzi olamis. He can never divorce her. Why does the Mishnah add the word olamis? The answer is because the problem there for the man to divorce as a shota is a problem mida oraisa. A man who's a shota cannot effectuate a divorce, as opposed to a case where the woman is a shota, where again, it's only a problem mida rabbanan, but mida oraisa, he can, of course, divorce her. Okay, then we said, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Ibay Elohu. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Ish Pshitale, the Isha come Ibay Elohu. Odilma Isha Pshitale, the Ish come Ibay Elohu. So again, back in the Mishnah on yesterday's daf, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri basically drew a distinction between the man and the woman in this regard. Again, as we already noted, because since you can divorce your wife against her will, therefore, even if she's a Shota Mida Oraisa, you should be able to divorce her. Whereas when it comes to the man, you can't do that. So the Gemara wants to know, what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri mean when he formulated his question? Did he mean to say that everyone knows that a man who's a shota or a cheresh cannot divorce his wife, but the suffix, the shiloh, was regarding if a woman is a shota or a chareshes? Or did he mean, no, everyone knows that if the woman becomes a shota or a chareshes, you can divorce her, but the question was regarding the man. So the Gemara says, Tashma, midaka amrule eno dome ha'isha migaresh le'isha ha'miskareshes, she'ha'isha yotzes lirtzona, v'shalo lirtzona, v'ha'ish eno motzi ela lirtzono, shma mina ish kami ba'yale. So on the one hand, the Gemara says, the fact that the Mishnah drew a distinction between a man and a woman by noting that a woman, Mida Oraisa, you can divorce her even against her will. Whereas a man, obviously, that is not the case. So clearly, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was discussing the status of the man. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Adarabba, Mida Ka'amar le'avzo kayotzeva, Shema mina isha kami boyle. The fact that the Rabbanan responded to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and said, well, this case of the woman who becomes a chareshes is similar to the case of the shota, so maybe you can argue that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was actually discussing the status of the woman, whether you can divorce a woman who becomes a shota or a chareshes. So the Gemara says, you're right, Elo Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri lidivrayim kamer lehu lididi kihechi de ish lamatze megarish isha nami lamegarsha elo lididchu maishna isha umaishna ish amrulei and odome haisha megarish leisha hamiskareshes. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was basically talking within the words of the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan's response basically was that, again, as we noted in the Mishnah already, that, you know, the case of a man and a woman are vastly different because, again, a man can divorce his wife Mida Oraisa against her will, so the standards are going to be very different than as opposed to a man who becomes a shota. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Heyed Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rava me'idu social Rabbi Yochanan ben Gulgada, Amar la'idim re'u get zeh she'ani nosein, v'amar la'kinsi shtarchov zeh, harezo megureshe. So comes the Gemara with the following. Based on the testimony, based on the statement that we quoted in the Mishnah yesterday of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gulgada, where he said that if a father marries off his daughter who's a chareshes, that the husband still has to give her a get in order to dissolve the marriage. So imagine the following. Imagine a person who's married goes over to two edim and he says, look, this is the get I'm about to give to my wife. And he hands a piece of paper to his wife and says, here's a shtar chov, here's an IOU, here's a bill of debt, you can go collect Reuven's debt. So she doesn't realize that she's getting a get. The edim realize that she's getting a get. So the Gemara says, that's fine, that's a valid divorce. So the Gemara then asks, Milo amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada, lo ba'inan daita, hachanami lo ba'inan daita. So presumably the reason why this divorce is valid is because you don't need the woman's das in the first place. You can divorce your wife against her will, so presumably that's the reason why the divorce is valid. So the Gemara says, pshita, this halacha seems to be obvious. What's the chiddush here? So the Gemara says, no. Mahu de sema, need the amar le kinsi shtar chose, batule batle, kamash malani, isa de batle, le idem have a ka amar lehu, umi de lo amar le idem la batle velo midi, bahai de ka amar hachi machmas kisufahu de ka amar lehu. The Gemara says that basically, if the guy was really intending to just give his wife a shtar chove and not to divorce her, so he should have told that to the edim, and why did he make up a story to his wife? Presumably because he was too embarrassed to admit to her that he was getting divorced, even though about 3 seconds later she would realize that she was eventually divorced. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rav Yitzchak bar Bisna irchasu le miftechei devei medrasha b'rishos harabim b'shabsa. Rav Yitzchak lost the keys to the base medrash in the rishos harabim on Shabbos. So he knew where they were, but he obviously couldn't carry them because it was Shabbos. So asa lekamei de Rabbi Pedas, amar le, zil devar tali v'talia v'litailu hasam, the imash kechelahu maisilahu. So the Gemara says, so basically, Rabbi Pedas suggested to him that what you should do is go get a group of young boys and girls, go bring them to the area where the keys were dropped, have them play there, and if one of them happens to find the keys, then you could lead them to the base medrash to open up the doors. So Alma Kasavar, Katan Ochel Nevelos, Ain Bezdim Mitzuvin LaHafrisho. This seems to support the idea that if you see a Katan who's eating trefos, or really just doing any Aveira at all, you don't have to stop them. So the Katan's going to end up violating Shabbos by carrying in the Rishos HaRabim, but that's not your problem. As long as you're not the one causing him to do the Aveira, that's fine. So the Gemara says, Lema misayale, lo yomar adam lesino, kaveli mafteach, kaveli chosam, ela manicho tolesh, manicho zorek. So the Gemara says, maybe this Brisa supports this idea. The Brisa says that you cannot go over to a child on Shabbos and say, bring me my keys through the Rishos HaRabim, bring me my seal, my signet ring through the Rishos HaRabim. But rather, what you have to do is that basically you just leave it. And if you see that the kid is, let's say, I don't know, plucking something out of the ground, so that's okay. I don't have to stop him. If you see a kid is throwing rocks in the Rishos HaRabim or throwing a ball, that's okay. I don't have to stop him. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a raya. Amar Rabbi Tolish ba'atzit she'en onak of zorik b'chanolish to Rabbanan. Perhaps the scenario where you don't have to stop a kid who's violating Shabbos is only if he's doing it midrabbanan. So let's say he's plucking something out of a pot that doesn't have a hole in it. So it's a non-perforated pot. So the issue to pluck something out of a non-perforated pot is only midrabbanan. Or let's say the kid is throwing a ball through a karmelis, which is only midrabbanan in the first place. So there you can argue that you don't have to stop him. What if the kid is violating a didoraisa? So there already the Gemara says, maybe you can argue that you do have to stop him. So